Coming up next on The Voice of Alabama Politics, we need Alabama solutions to Alabama problems. Also, the legislature is looking at how to improve economic development. And the Department of Corrections, it's a ticking time bomb. Boom, 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 boom. All of this and much, much more coming up next on The V. Welcome to The Voice of Alabama Politics, where we tackle the tough issues so you have the hard facts. I'm your host, Bill Britt, and today I'm joined by Susan Britt, research guru extraordinaire, and Josh Moon, columnist and investigative reporter and all-around great guy. Josh, nice. Welcome.
Yeah. Nice. I like that introduction. We should stick with that. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. That's
a good one. Are you happy today, man?
Are you happy?
I am happy. I am happy, Pat.
All right. Hey, we've been meaning to get back to the studio in Montgomery, but things just keep holding us up.
Oh, man.
We're supposed to be there next week, though. And then on the 23rd, or not the 23rd, but that the week of the 23rd, we have Bill Poole coming on, the finance director.
Yep.
Nice.
That'll be good.
Nice. He can explain what happened to all the money. Yeah.
Yeah. Where the money went.
They've got a lot of money this time, so he can explain about what's going on with that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we're hoping. Right plays into our first topic is, one of the big things that they're going to have to look at this session is the renewal of these economic incentive packages, which are about $350 million a year annually. Those were started back in 2015, Susan. They have to be renewed this year, and they're looking to increase those. But Greg Canfield gave some pretty interesting statistics. Secretary of Commerce Greg Canfield gave some interesting statistics.
Yeah, he said it's brought in about $17 billion in investments above the incentives. Also, 34,000 jobs over the 7 years of the act's been in effect. He's saying that this is, I think, a good thing for Alabama.
You know, Josh, I've had mixed emotions about whether these economic incentives are a great idea or not. But... Mm-hmm. They seem to be working. We just need to make sure we've got accountability on those things, I think.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where I think people like to assign it either a good or a bad grade. And there's a lot of nuance to these sorts of things. Of course, they're good. Whenever you can attract businesses here, Toyota Mazda, for example, which is, basically a good driver from my house where I live. And, it's going to change the complexion of this area. And it's employed just thousands and thousands of people and up the income levels of bunches of people and helped the housing market, helped all sorts of businesses grow and flourish from local businesses to chain stores around this area. So, yeah, I mean, those things are good. I mean, what you're looking for is a balance. And I think I heard Will Ainsworth talk the other day about, kind of trying to find things that work and make the incentives based upon employee numbers and things of that nature. And I think what you do is you put these things in place, and then as you go forward, like right now, and you have to renew them, then you fix what we know needs to be fixed out of them. You make them better, you correct the mistakes, you see where you're lacking, you see where you've lost money, and you fix those things.
One thing I will disagree with Canfield on, though, he says, the availability of good sites for incoming businesses is concerned about that. Let's look at some of these rural areas where you've lost jobs because of, say, businesses closing, or areas that need something, like in the Black Belt and stuff. Let's start looking at some of these rural areas. I mean, in Madison, where you're at, that's a booming area. That's great.
But at one point, it was rural.
It was rural. It was cotton. That was all cotton fields. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's start looking at other places in the state that maybe we can bring some more jobs, bring some more prosperity, and like you said, with the other businesses that also crop up around that.
Well, I think Secretary Canfield did say that we have to get to the point where these economic incentives are impacting directly mm-hmm. all 67 counties and not mm-hmm. just the areas that are already growing.
I think that's absolutely true. And I'll tell you, another thing that we should be contemplating in this is turning the successes. You know, if we've actually got 34,000 jobs and 17 billion or whatever, reinvesting that in producing a workforce that does not require incentives to attract businesses. And I think that is the ultimate goal that we should be looking at in our education system and in our workforce training programs that we have, our tech schools and tech programs in high schools. If we can create that sort of a workforce by using some of the money and maybe tie that money into the incentives package as well, then I think that tie those programs to those incentive packages. And I think that we could really change the way this state is.
Well, and I think one other thing, and you bring this to mind talking about that, one of the big attractions for businesses to come to an area is quality of life.
Yeah.
If you have to offer them a reason to want to come to Madison County, to Jefferson County, to Tuscaloosa, you know, give them a reason to want to come there, and which that means that we have to invest in the things that bring about quality of life, schools, infrastructure, you know, things to do. Nobody wants to move to a place where there's nothing to do.
Right.
You know, or they have to drive 2 hours to go to a movie.
Or they got to drive two counties to find a pediatrician, you know? I mean,
that's true.
You know, those sorts of things, we've got to correct those things. You're right. That's 100%. And we have to fix infrastructure. That's one of the main drawbacks that businesses often talk about with the Black Belt region is we've done a horrible job with infrastructure in the Black Belt region down there. It's terrible in places, and it's our fault. I mean, it's our fault as a state.
Well, I know that talking to some new freshman legislators that said, well, the gas tax would never passed if we'd have been in office. And I was like, sorry, you're in office now.
Yeah.
Because without the gas tax, you couldn't grow the infrastructure. If you can't grow the infrastructure, you can't have business. If you don't have business, you don't have economic prosperity. If you don't have economic prosperity, people leave the state. They don't come to the state. But, you know, this is the kind of nonsense that they think is conservative. What it is it's uninformed.
Yeah,
I agree. Ill-informed.
Well, it's an ill-informed. You know, first of all, I don't understand how you can get to attacking the gas tax before you attack the income tax rates that we allow some people to pay. Okay. And so I think that's got to be at the top of your list. If you're talking about ways to get around this gas tax and taxing people to go from who are going to work every day, which I was against. You know, I was against the gas tax as well because I felt like it was an attack on people who were going to work every day, working class folks. And so I felt there was a way to adjust the income tax brackets and pay for the same things. And I still believe that today. And to say otherwise and to act like this gas tax is the big burden versus, you know, raising that income tax level on certain people making above a threshold way up there, then I think that you're crazy.
You know, one thing you got to remember here. You've got to be able to pay for what you're doing.
Yep.
The only way you can get there is through taxes.
All right, we're going to have to leave it right there. You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
There seems to be a new wave of aggressive driving lately.
You see those people, they are the ones that are tailgating other people because they have to get through their destination now.
Weaving in and out of traffic looks like they could care less about who's around them. There's no one else on the roadway. They're the only one there.
Aggressive driving can be the difference between life and death.
All because somebody thought they needed to be the front of the line and get there first.
Slow down. Don't be the reason that someone else doesn't go home tonight.
My dog Jupiter is frightened when I climb too high, the owl said.
Check for monsters, Daddy.
I did, honey. There are no monsters. You're perfectly safe.
Protect yourself and those you love. Vaccinate now.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. Prisons, 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 prisons. How much further can the prisons sink before somebody goes, enough's enough?
Well, if they build it at that site in Elmore, they'll sink a lot.
Yeah, we've heard some bad things about that. Interesting. You know, and the crazy thing, and Josh, you got a story we want to get to here, a very important story. But Susan, the state has been sued by the federal government over the mental health conditions, mm-hmm. over the conditions of the prison. I mean, to the point where they cited that they violate the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, where they are cruel and unusual punishment. Mm-hmm. But we are spending a lot of money to defend the state against lawsuit that we're bound to lose. I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, something like $20 million so far, and they haven't even gotten to anywhere near setting a trial date yet. Yeah. I mean, we're spending all of this money with attorneys where we could be using that in a better place, especially since Alabama already has attorneys on staff.
But Josh, we're spending $20 million or so dollars mm-hmm. on private attorneys mm-hmm. To defend us, and nothing's happened. I don't see what they're doing. The one thing I do see they're doing is Steve Marshall signs off on all these big contracts, our attorney general, and one of the law firms has gotten a ton of money, millions and millions and millions, are one of his biggest contributors. So, you know, conservative Marshall, people might want to look at the fact that his buddies are making millions of dollars defending the state, but that's just small piece.
Well, there's certainly something that stinks in regards to what we're paying and the return that we are receiving on this.
Yeah.
We have paid essentially one attorney and his team, and I'm talking about Bill Lunsford for Maynard Cooper Gale. I mean, these are public records. It's not like I'm exposing anything that a dozen other reporters haven't already talked about in this thing, because we've paid them tens of millions of dollars at this point on a case that we know we're going to lose. You know, and in talking to Representative Chris England the other day about another story that we're going to get to, which is just off the charts crazy, he mentioned there's nobody who would objectively look, or even biased, who would look at this lawsuit that the federal government, the Trump Department of Justice, filed against Alabama and say, we're winning that lawsuit. We're not.
There's no
chance that we're winning it. And yet somehow or another, we have maintained this adversarial relationship with the federal government throughout this thing. And we have resisted a consent decree with them that we know we're going to have to go under anyway. We know we're going to have the federal government come in and take these things over and force us to do the things that we would do under a consent decree and save us millions of dollars.
Yeah. And this is nothing new. This has been going on for several years now. This is not something that happened yesterday or last month.
Well, it's not unusual. And we've seen this with other attorney generals. We've seen it with the governors, that millions of dollars go to their buddies mm-hmm. to defend us against the indefensible. But I want to get to that story that you covered this week. You reported on exclusively. The Alabama Department of Corrections signed a $1 billion contract, a four-year billion-dollar contract.
Will it be?
For a company to provide health care services for state inmates, those incarcerated by the state. The contract went to Yes Care, and we're not saying Yes Care did anything wrong, but it came up before contract review, and you discovered, and others have pointed out to you, that there were some anomalies in how Yes Care got the contract. So you want to enlighten us on that, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I got to say, as so often is the case, this was not an example of super sleuth reporting exactly. Okay, I basically just watched the meeting, you know, and I'll say this: the Montgomery Advertiser also did a story about this as well, and so you know, there were others that caught on to what was going on there as well, and really it was Chris England's peppering of the attorney for the Alabama Department of Corrections that kind of led to an exchange that was one of the most remarkable things I've ever heard, where the attorney for the Alabama Department of Corrections admitted to the contract review committee that one bidder, the bidder that ultimately received the contract, had inside information. And so they discovered that this was the case. They pulled the bid back, then reissued the RFP, the request for proposal, or basically a request for bids from everybody again. And this time, she says, they gave everybody the same information, including that inside information that was handed out to the YesCare folks. And then YesCare got the contract again. And it just, as Chris England said, it reeks of impropriety of some sorts there when this has taken place and they still get this contract. But, and the reason that it does is because Bill Lunsford, the person that we just talked about as representing the Alabama Department of Corrections in all of these cases, including a lawsuit directly related to health care, he's defended the state on it multiple times. He was on the board of YesCare when the initial contract was awarded. He was on the board of advisors. They call it an advisory board, but it says in the comments about this appointment that he's going to advise the CEO on various matters. And so, I mean, it's a billion. It's, again, as Chris England said, it's a $1 billion contract from one of our most troubled state agencies. You would think that it would be handled above reproach, and it was anything but.
Well, and Susan, that this is the thing. Now, Lunsford has been gotten off that board.
Right, right.
But, you know, it just, even if there's no wrongdoing, we're not saying there is, it just stinks to high heaven.
It does.
It just, and it smells like Alabama politics.
That was England's point. Yeah.
If you compare the two contracts, the one that between the one that we had and this YesCare coming in, The point system on which they were graded for the contract, the cost of the two contracts, it doesn't add up to actually YesCare really getting that contract other than something else going on. Not that I'm saying that there is, it just smells really bad.
They're getting paid $60 million more in the contract than the lowest bidder.
Yeah.
Right.
And they didn't score higher than everybody else.
It's just that the whole thing stinks, and it was, I think some people legitimately believed, and because I heard it from them, from their mouths, from the sources I talked to, that inside information, you know, quote unquote, that they received really helped them along in the process. And you're right, it just reeks, the whole thing smells. And then when you look at YesCare's history, which it used to be Corizon, you look at the history, there's a problem there.
All right, we're gonna have to leave it right there. You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
Throughout my career, I've seen many crashes, and a lot of the fatalities are from people who haven't worn their seatbelt.
Cars have rolled over multiple times. I've had people end up in lakes, ravines. I've been looking for people in the woods for a couple hours before.
Usually just about every bone in their body is broken, their organs have ruptured, and typically they die.
You want to save a life? Just simply click a button and put the seatbelt on.
Seatbelts really do save lives.
There was an old woman who lived in a shoe. She had so many children, she didn't know what to do. She gave them some broth without any bread and kissed them all soundly.
Lights out.
Good night.
And put them to bed. Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org.
Speed is one of the biggest factors in a fatal car crash. Your car stops, but your body does not stop at the same time. Your body keeps going, you know, and that could be running into your seatbelt, that could be hitting the airbag, something has to stop it, and unfortunately, it's something very hard.
There have been times that we've come upon accidents where if people weren't speeding, they'd probably still be alive today.
It's truly dangerous, and it puts everybody at risk.
There's just no point to it.
This kind of stuff has got to stop.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. I hate to just beat on the Department of Corrections, but we have to treat prisoners humanely. We cannot lock them up, throw away the key, and watch them die. Susan, reportedly, in just the first month of this year, 11 inmates have died in state custody. 11 within incarcerated individuals was inside state prison. Homicides, suicides, and drug overdoses. 11, but the crazy thing is, 266 died last year. Mm-hmm. 266.
You know, and one in five deaths was due, you know, like you said, due to homicide, suicide, drug overdose. You know, one of the things I see right there is, like we go back to the contract we were just talking about, is a mental health issue in there too. But we're not addressing that. We're throwing money at the situation. We're not addressing everything that needs to be taken care of. I mean, you know, we had 266 deaths and a custody population of 20,569, the most recent reporting. I mean, that's a lot. That's a whole lot of folks.
I mean, that's like Atala, you know, here in beautiful downtown Atala. That's like, you know, we have a 266 deaths. And if most of them are actually healthy young individuals that are locked up here in Atala, all dying in a year, it's crazy.
Yeah. It's a mess. And I mean, it really is. It's a testament to how wrong we've been at every step of the way in the way that we've handled our correction system. And you know, one of the major problems that we should all have is that we've put almost zero emphasis on preventative care and stopping some of the mental health issues that we see in our prisons before they fester into suicides. We've done a horrible job of doing that. We have no incentives whatsoever, basically, for the healthcare providers that we currently have, or from what I can tell, and the ones that we're going to contract with at Yes Care, we have zero incentives for them to install some preventative care. And you know, we've got to do a better job. And I mean, if we had expanded Medicaid at some point, then I believe we could offset a lot of these costs and a lot of this treatment, and we could implement some preventative care and head some of these things off at the pass. But, you know, again, it's all part of this big ball that we keep pushing, and it never seems to go anywhere. And as a matter of fact, it usually goes backwards on us.
Well, and this is one of the things, you know, there was all this hoopla about letting out these prisoners recently. Now, the Department of Corrections screwed that up. By not notifying the victims or following protocol after having 18 months to do it. Mm-hmm. But the idea there, Susan and Josh, was that these people would have a period of time where they were under supervised parole that we would ease them into the transition of prison life to life in the real world. Mm-hmm. And that's the goal. That was the goal. But now they want to backtrack on that because they had a result that they didn't like. That's life. You're going to have results that you don't like. But that doesn't mean you abandon the whole idea.
No,
you don't. And no, you cannot just take a prisoner straight out of prison, especially if they've been in there for a considerable amount of time, and just drop them out into society. People don't understand that a lot of these people that are getting out have been in there since they were teenagers. They don't know how to do things like set an alarm in the morning to get up. You know, that's all this stuff has been done for them, and now they're going to have to be self-sufficient. So that will be a great idea to do, but I just don't think they'll follow through.
So supervised probation was the idea. It's got a little out of hand. Now they want to throw that out completely.
It just, you know, what is our goal? I say this all the time. It's corrections is in the name. I mean, I know a lot of people say, you know, in ADOC, the C stands for corruption, but it actually stands for corrections, you know?
Yeah, it does.
And so if we're going to present this as a corrective system, where is the corrections in this? Where are the policies that help ensure that we don't wind up with the same people just recycling over and over and over again in our prison system. I mean, it's so frustrating, and it's so disappointing all the time. All the time it's this way.
Well, my question here is, okay, where is the legislature? All right, this is what we hire them to do. We hire them to take a problem, look at it, analyze it. Meanwhile, they're over here worried about, you know, transgender and CRT. I'm putting it on the legislature. Y'all need to take a look into what's going on at ADOC and start looking at some policies, talking to some experts, and figure out how we fix this situation.
You've got some smart people, like Representative Jim Hill, who's been on the bench for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Chris England, very thoughtful man. These people have genuine ideas and policies. And every time they get one through, somebody somewhere screws it up. People go, oh, no, we don't want to do that anymore. It is not the failure of one time.
No.
This has to be a long-term investment into the future, because all these people are going to get out of prison, except for the ones that have committed murder and are in there for life. They're going to get out.
Yes, and it's, you know, the percentages is what gets to me the most. I mean, whenever we have one person screw up royally, and God knows there have been some that have screwed up royally, then we throw out the whole system. We wreck the whole thing. We get rid of good time laws, you know, because one person did something stupid way back when. And it just... You know, it's such an ignorant way to go about it. And that's why when you said bring up the legislature, you know what they're going to do. They're going to do this I'm tough on crime nonsense, you know, and it's going to help nobody. It's going to help nobody but themselves. And it's going to just exacerbate the problem to a point that, you know, hell, I don't even know how much more you could exacerbate it at this point.
I don't need that. We got about 20 seconds. I'm going to take a point of privilege here and say a very conservative notion, a very even Christian notion, is that every life has intrinsic value. Every life is valuable. Now, when we put people in prison, they are not less valuable. They just have they've broken the law, but it does not make them intrinsically horrible. And they should have an opportunity once they are released from incarceration to have a life that's worthwhile. But that's my sermon for the day. It is Sunday. You've been watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. You watch us because we watch them.